This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And the opening half hour of the show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and on every day. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, my two favorites, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. John Parato, who covers the Pirates. Do your in-laws still live in Sunbury, John?
Yeah, so they both passed away, but both my sisters-in-laws and their family live there, and my wife grew up in Sunbury.
Right, so in other words, our ratings have doubled today just by having you on.
Oh, at least. I'm very big in Sunbury, Steve. Huge.
I'm really. No surprise to this veteran campaigner. All right, so... John, what I found interesting, and I know Shelton addressed this yesterday a bit, there's been really very little drama with some of the late roster moves. Over the years, like sometimes going into opening day, they've had some drama as to who's going to be there. What does that tell us about the lack of drama with this roster coming out of camp?
I think it's a good sign. I think that it was, you know, a good spring, and I think it shows that they have more stability now than they've had in a few years, where in many other years you went to spring training and there were three, four roster spots, or not spots, I should say, jobs in the lineup that were up in the air. And I think this shows they have some stability now. They have some direction. And it's no longer trying to overhaul the roster every year. It is now to more fine-tune things than just have basically an open tryout camp for 6 weeks.
All right. Now, let's get to the actual roster itself. What guys... Look, spring training's different. Look, you can sit there and go hit 400 in spring training, and you're 0 for 4 in opening day. Your batting average is 0. Okay. So, but who really had the look in training camp that you liked?
Well, I thought the most encouraging sign, Steve, was O'Neill Cruz, their shortstop, who basically missed the entire season, got hurt in the second weekend of the season last year, broke his ankle, and missed the rest of the year. He hit 7 home runs, and more importantly, he was moving around well. He wasn't playing with a limp. He seemed to have his speed intact after that broken ankle. But, I mean, this is a guy who clearly has big, big, big-time power at 6'7", and, you know, for him to hit 7 home runs, and not only that, but he cut down on his strikeouts. He, you know, I wasn't there the entire spring, but the times I saw him play, he didn't chase at nearly as many bad pitches. And I know talking to Shelton and talking to Andy Haynes, the hitting coach, they also were pleased by how much he has gotten better as being able to lay off the bad pitches. And if he does that, then I really think the sky's the limit, because the only thing holding him back was just the strikeouts, and so many times he got himself out by not swinging at good pitches.
Henry Davis, they really felt like they needed his bat, because his bat had a major league look to it, but they had to play him in the field, especially in right field. He's been behind the plate, and by all signs, John, it appears he has improved back there. What impressed you about his work behind the plate? Because I think the bat's a given.
Well, I think what impressed me most, Steve, is he basically took no off season at all, except for a week between Christmas and New Year's. Most of the winter he spent in Bradenton at the Pirates Pirate City training facility there. Worked on his defense, which was really the big question mark, was if he was going to be good enough to stay behind the plate. Also went to Driveline Institute in Seattle, which is a lot of players go to now. They have a lot of computer-based analysis, analytical-type analysis that help players improve. And he really improved his defense. And I know they signed Yasmani Grandal, the veteran catcher, and I think they thought he would be the number one and Davis would either be the number two or go to Indianapolis at AAA for more seasoning. But Davis really seized the job, and I think even though Grandal did get hurt and will begin the year on the injured list, I think Henry Davis would have been the number one catcher regardless. And, you know, I'll give him credit. He took, he's taken a lot of heat from the fans and on social media. A lot of people thought he was a bust because he was the first overall pick in the 2021 draft out of Louisville. But he worked really, really, really hard, and he really deserves the chance to be the starting catcher after all the work he put in and all the improvement he showed.
Do the fans on social media know this is baseball and this isn't the NFL? The first overall pick still takes a couple of years to get there. Do they understand that? I mean, this isn't the NBA, man.
I don't think a lot of them do, unfortunately. I think when you're here in Pittsburgh, it's a football mentality, and everybody wants, like, every game is the most important game of the year, and if you lose a game, it's like you're never going to win another game. And I think that's the mentality that happens sometimes. Yeah, then you put it on social media, Steve, and it amplifies by about 15.
Exactly. Look, it's, I mean, there's some great social media that's being used out there, and then there are others where you know it's not a Mensa convention. All right, so defensively, I thought the Pirates were a little bit better defensively last year. Did you see a better defensive team in Florida?
Yeah, I did. You know, I think, I don't think they're going to have Gold Glovers at every position, but they do have to keep Brian Hayes at third, who won a Gold Glove. Jared Triolo is making the transition from third, where he was never going to play because of Hayes, over to second base, and he looked very good at second base. I think O'Neill Cruz looked solid at shortstop. The outfield defense looked good in the games I saw, and I don't know if it's going to be one of the top five in major league defenses, but I certainly think it's a lot better than it was 2 years ago, and I think it'll be better than it was last year too.
How do you view the rotation? I mean, the contract for Keller and so forth, but how do you view the rotation? Then I'll get to Bednar in a moment.
Well, it's no question it's a little bit iffy. And, I mean, it could be good if some things work out right, and it could be a real problem if things don't. Mitch Keller, as you alluded to, he's going to be the opening day starter on Thursday in Miami. It'll be his second straight year. He signed a five-year, $77 million contract early in spring training. Then they have a couple of veteran lefties in Martin Perez and Marco Gonzalez, who they signed Perez and traded for Gonzalez in the offseason. Both of them had down years last year, but Perez was really, really sharp this spring. Gonzalez was so-so, but Gonzalez, they both have track records of being pretty good big league pitchers. And then the fourth and fifth spot, it's interesting, Bailey Falter, the former Philly left-hander who they picked up in a trade last July, kind of surprisingly is going to be the fourth starter. He didn't necessarily have a great spring, but they saw enough in him, and he also was out of minor league options, so they would have had to put him through waivers if they tried to send him to the minor leagues. He's at least going to start the year off in the rotation. And then one of the great stories of spring training for the Pirates, Jared Jones, one of their very top prospects, a 22-year-old right-hander. He went the whole spring without giving up an earned run in 16 and a third innings, and he made the team. They told him yesterday he's on the team. He started last year in Altoona at Double A, finished at Triple A in Indianapolis, had a had a pretty good year, but he was really, really good this spring, and I saw him pitch a couple times when I was down there, and they feel he's ready at 22, and it's exciting to see what he can do. He was their second-round pick in 2020, and he clearly has a great arm. He throws hard, he has a good slider, and the times I talked to him, he doesn't seem intimidated at all. He seems like, from a mental standpoint, that he feels like he's ready to face big league hitters, and he's confident he can get them out.
Yeah, that's something. I guess his reaction was priceless when they told him yesterday. You know, this is like one of those rewarding things for any manager to get that kind of reaction out of somebody that made the club. Now Bednar, he is going to stay in Bradenton for a little bit. So where is he right now on the path back?
Well, they don't seem concerned. He missed a lot of the spring. He had the tightness in his lat muscle behind his right shoulder. But he only pitched twice this spring. He pitched last Thursday. It was the first time he pitched in a game situation all spring. I'm a little worried myself. I mean, the guy only logged two innings the entire Grapefruit League season. I don't know how ready he'll be. Like you said, they held him back. He's going to pitch. He pitched. Yes, he's going to pitch in an inter-squad minor league type situation, and then they hope to have him Thursday in Miami for the opener. But I'm just a touch concerned. You know, one of the great things that's helped them is he stayed healthy for the 3 years he's been there, and he's turned into one of the best relief pitchers in the major leagues. But there's never really been a health issue outside of a back issue 2 years ago. But as far as an arm problem, he's never had any arm problems, and this is technically not an arm problem, but it is behind his shoulder. And I don't have a lot of confidence in somebody going into the season only pitched twice all spring, but hopefully I'm wrong and he'll be okay. But I do think there's cause for a little bit of a red flag there, Steve.
So John, who closes then in till he gets back?
Well, Aroldis Chapman would be most likely the former Reds and Yankees closer, and I know the Pirates surprised a lot of people in the winter when they signed Chapman as a free agent for 1 year and $10.5 million, which is a lot of money by Pirates standards. And, you know, he has over 300 career saves. He's been a six- or seven-time All-Star. And it looks to me, what I saw him in spring training and, you know, with scouts and other people that saw him other times when I wasn't there, as he still throws close to 100, and he's still an effective pitcher, and they feel the Pirates do, and the scouts I talked to all feel if something would happen to Bednar, that Chapman could still come back, you know, still step into that closer's role and be a very effective pitcher.
Yeah, he can be. He also is the kind of guy that creates managers to find religion. All right, So he does all of that and more. How important, I know the club got off to a good start last year, but how important is it going to be for this club to just get out of the gate, get off to a start, maybe build something early?
Yeah, I think the one thing that they did build some momentum last year, and they had the great start, and then they weren't very good for 2.5 months, and then they finished strong. They went 18-13. They basically knocked the Reds and the Cubs out of pennant contention in the last 2 weeks of the season. So, I mean, you'd like to build on that. I don't think they're going to get out of the gate 22-8 like they did last year. But, you know, I think there's optimism there. There's a feeling that there's finally some light at the end of the tunnel in this long rebuilding that they've been under since Ben Cherington became GM after the 2019 season. And I think they need to play good baseball. I mean, I don't think they need to be 22-8, but the worst thing that would happen when you finally build optimism both inside your clubhouse, inside your organization, and with the fans here in the Pittsburgh area is to start off the season like 6-17 or something like that. I think if they can at least keep their heads above water, I think eventually some of the young pitching prospects will come up and stabilize that pitching staff. And I think they have a chance in a division that's really not all that strong. to maybe contend if a few things break right. But I do think it, for the morale of everyone, they do need to get off to a, if not a blazing start, certainly a good start to keep that good feeling going from throughout the end of last season in the winter that, that things are starting to pick up here.
By the way, what is the thought process in Pittsburgh about the club, about going to the ballpark? I mean, how does the average everyday fan feel about the team?
I think they're encouraged. I think they're a little skeptical because of the owner, Bob Nutting, who historically has just not really tried to win, to be totally honest, and not spent the money necessary. But I do think they look at some of the young players here. And I think the fact that the Pirates brought Andrew McCutchen back last year was a definitely a very good PR move. And not only that, but he can still play. He's certainly not an MVP caliber player like he was 10 years ago,
sure,
but he can still play and contribute. And I think that helped a lot. And I do think there is optimism. There seems to be a lot more interest, you know, just, I mean, for take it for what it's worth, but if I'm out, like at the bank or the supermarket or something, you know, I run into people, they'll ask me about the Pirates and seem to want to talk about them. And there for a few years, I mean, nobody gave, you know, could care less. So I do think there is more interest here in Pittsburgh, and now it's up to the Pirates to give the fans reason to sustain that interest.
Hey, John, this was a pleasure. Really appreciate it. Great information as always, and just appreciate the time you gave us.
Oh, my pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me on anytime.
That's great. We really enjoyed that. John, thanks so much. You know, John Parrotto, who covers the Pittsburgh Pirates. I know we do a lot on the Phillies, but you know what? Got to shift gears and go over to Pittsburgh once in a while. We're going to go from, I thought was a relatively optimistic report. Didn't you feel, Todd?
Well,
I thought John was realistic, but optimistic. We're going to go 180 of that. We got Matt Cotrello coming up. We're going to go into, well, probably depression is probably the best way to put it.
I don't know. It depends. I wonder what he's wound up about.
Well, for one thing, Quez Watkins is a Steeler.
Woohoo!
So, in other words, no, you should haul. Quez Watkins caught a preseason pass 2 years ago. You'd have thought Jerry Rice suddenly was in Philadelphia.
Is the next Mike Quick?
Oh, unbelievable. Oh, Mike Quick, I enjoy working with him. Yeah. So we're going to talk with Matt. As always, that will be a lot of listening on our part, don't you think?
Most likely.
Yeah. All right, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Brewers Outlet.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
You want a unique way to display your brand. You need a team of seasoned experts to work with. You want to reach customers who buy. You want NIL Game Changers, a versatile consulting agency powered by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents. NIL Game Changers will help you build powerful relationships with customers through compelling stories, with student athlete influencers as your leading edge. Finally, we'll equip you with the right media to drive your success home. NILGameChangers.org, building meaningful relationships with your customers.
Yeah, all right. Matt Cotrello next half hour. It's always difficult to predict what direction that mind is going to go in. And that's, I'm just saying. Can you predict it, Todd?
Oh, no. Hey, I was just thinking, not much happened in the Eagles universe. I'm guessing it's going to be Yankees-centric this week.
Yankee-centric.
Yes. I don't know. Did enough happen this weekend in the NCAA tournament to upset him?
No, not really. You know, I mean, I know that Aaron Judge is... what would you guess? I would guess he's, what, 6 weeks away from going on the IL?
It depends on Stanton, if Stanton beats him there first.
It'll be the first of two stints this season.
I wonder if that's a prop bet.
Probably. I'm sure ESPN has it.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour is brought to you in part by NIL Game Changers. The ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities for both athletes and businesses. Visit NILGameChangers.org to start your journey today. I mean, Todd, I always say about NIL Game Changers, they can make the suit look good. Imagine what they can do for you. No? Not the slogan? Just checking.
I was talking on the phone to him. He is here.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Matt Cotrillo, speaking for the average American. Emphasis on average.
I am a man of the people, as they say. At least I try to be.
Which people?
Sports fans everywhere.
I mean, right out of the gate, I thought of you. We knew the NFL was going to take Wednesday, Christmas Day. They're going to put two games on Christmas Day this year on a Wednesday. Yeah.
Once again, exactly. Yeah, between there's that, there are these ridiculous rule changes going on with the kickoffs and with the ban of the hip drop. Yeah, that's where we're mostly going to be spending our time today, Mr. Steve Jones.
Well, good. Let it rip. Tell America what fries you.
Well, first of all, with the Wednesday thing, look, I get it. The Christmas Day, you want to take advantage of that, but, I mean, that's even worse than having a game on a Friday, because that totally screws up somebody's schedule for teams, because especially if you're playing on a Sunday, I mean, that is like such a quick turnaround. I mean, we're all about trying to do player safety, especially with this ridiculous kickoff rule, and then we're trying to play games on Wednesdays, Fridays. It was already tough enough to play games on Thursdays, so please, spare me with the player safety stuff, especially now that this comes out, that they're going to play games on Wednesdays now for next year. Friday's worse. Wednesdays, it's just beyond that at this point. So, now getting to the kickoff thing, I don't necessarily mind the formation type thing to combat the head injuries, but at the same time get kickoffs back. I find it kind of ironic that the NFL is actually taking something from the XFL, but that's a different topic. but the only big beef I have with this is the elimination of the surprise onside kick. I mean, you're taking away a strategy that we've seen used in many games, including the Saints in the Super Bowl several years ago, where it totally changed the complexion of the game. So you're taking that away by making the team that wants to go for an onside kick say we're going to do an onside kick, and you have to literally report it down to the official. So that kind of just gives that everything away to the opponent. So that's my biggest gripe with this. So if you're going to pass that, my thought was, if you're going to pass that, at least pass something to change the onside kick where the Eagles have proposed, where you do the 4th and 20 instead of doing the onside kick. To me, you need something to combat this. because it totally just takes it away now at this point. Because now you have to literally report it to give away your strategy, basically, to the opposing team. So that's really my biggest issue with this rule. But that doesn't compare to the elimination of this hip drop ban rule now. Because I'm looking at all the different examples of the plays and the tackles that they're showing at the league meetings. Actually, Todd was the one that put this out on Twitter. I completely agree. It's pretty much a normal tackle. I mean, sure, there's some plays where guys get their feet caught under them and whatnot, but guess what? This is the NFL. This is football. Injuries are still going to happen, whether we like it or not. That's the way it is. And actually, you're now making the game more dangerous by making defensive players now have to, I think, hesitate more to make sure that either they don't cost their team a 15-yard penalty during the game, which could change the complexion of a game, or they don't get fined later on, which looks like it's more that's going to happen than actually penalizing the team during the game, as players are going to get fined. Now, if you're a player with making top dollar, that's going to be probably nickels and dimes. But say you're an average special teams player, or you're a second or third string guy on defense or offense, and you make that kind of a tackle. That could be significant, because what we're trying to do is try to make this game safe, but yeah, we're going back to playing games on Wednesdays. I mean, just this whole thing is just so ridiculous. It's so convoluted. It's hypocritical, this whole hip drop ban thing. It's going to make the game a lot worse, plus the game itself. If you throw the flag, you're adding more subjective calls to the game. You're adding more stoppages to the game, which we were trying to combat, I thought. So just everything is just so all over the place. And I'll say this before, I'll say this again. Roger Goodell, NFL owners, leave well enough alone.
Yeah, this is something I'll talk to Jack about at some point, because, I mean, Jack and I have talked about this before. It's very difficult on defensive players now because they don't know, like, how do you tackle? And that's a big part of this. How do you tackle? And it's difficult for a guy to come in there and he thinks he's doing it right, and then he's told that he's done it wrong. Like, okay, great.
Not only for the coaches, too, it's harder on them. How do you coach it? How do you teach it now?
Yeah.
Because it's just getting harder and harder. And sometimes where these situations come into play, you can't necessarily go over into practice. They just happen in the game.
Yeah. I think that, too, the NFL has had a propensity over the years to react to a situation. I believe it's Mark Andrews that got hurt on this tackle.
Yes, that's correct.
And they have a tendency too often to overreact on something when,
no question,
sometimes it just, quote, happens. And somebody has to be smart enough in the room to say, look, sometimes it happens. We're seeing an epidemic of it, then we need to take a closer look. But you can't react to one. And I think that's what they've done here. They've overreacted to one because it was a high-profile player and a high-profile tackle. Okay, but that's going to happen. It's football at full speed, and I don't quite go along with, you know, what they're doing and overreacting to a play, because the play was not malicious.
Exactly. And again, as I talked about before, what the owners don't realize is the more the harder you make it on defensive players, the more dangerous now you're going to make the game by trying to make it safer. It's because guys don't know what to do anymore. And if you don't know what to do, if you hesitate even a split second when you're playing football, I don't care what level of football you're playing, that's when the most serious injuries can occur. Because you have to be lickety-split, know what you're doing, or else you can get flown out of nowhere and get hit out of nowhere, and that's where a lot of these tough injuries can happen, too.
Yeah. And again, this will be some... Jack's going to be here Friday, and we're gonna go over to the scrimmage together. But I'm going to talk to him about, you know, what he thinks, because we've talked about the tackling part before. It's just on the collegiate level. like, you know, how you got to tackle between the chest and you got to tackle just below the waist. And if you go too low, that's bad. If you go too high, that's bad. The inconsistency of the targeting rule on the collegiate level is something that's always bothered me.
Absolutely. I mean, me too.
I mean, it's just so inconsistent. I mean, I've seen guys, their helmets have gone into shoulder pads and they've been thrown out of games. Like, no. He hit the spot of the that is as protected as any. That's the shoulder pad. I don't get it.
Yep, I don't get it either. At least the one thing that these kids will be used to when they're going into the NFL is they'll be used to inconsistencies about tackling and if you're playing on defense, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
And then your guy, Quez Watkins, whom you had in the Pro Bowl after the preseason 2 years ago, is now a Steeler.
Not anymore.
Is now a Steeler.
Yeah, I literally texted our buddy Alex Azora. I said, have fun with Quez Watkins, watching him fumble the ball every time he gets there and drop the ball.
Oh, now we're negative. He was the second coming of Jerry Rice to you before. Come on.
Oh, he wasn't. I mean, he was good at the time, but I've just never seen a player significantly drop off the way he has, honestly. So, as I said to him, and I think the Steelers will eventually address it more in the draft, but they've got to do a whole heck of a lot better than that. They're bringing in Quez Watkins. If they want to see any improvement with that offense, I don't care who you have at quarterback.
See, they've made all the great quarterback moves. What have you done? You got Kenny Pickett.
As I said to Todd a couple weeks ago, I'm actually okay with him as a backup. He's better than Marcus Mariota.
Oh,
at least he's a guy that can fling the ball every once in a while. Sure, he's got some accuracy issues. He is what he is. But I think this reset will be good for him. He's close to home. He can just sit back and learn a little bit. And I have more confidence in him than I do in Marcus Mariota, because here's a guy that, sure, he's had his inconsistencies, but he's made some big-time throws and big-time situations, and Marcus Mariota hasn't done that. And I think he can fit pretty well in the Eagles system. So I'm fine with him as a backup. That's fine.
We're just making sure. I just want to make, I'm here to listen to you to keep you calm, because your wife and children need that.
Yes, and that's why I said it's always very cathartic. And like I said, when you were absent a couple weeks ago, and Todd did the exact same thing. In fact, Todd used to be that guy for me when I was first starting at the Daily Item. So he should be almost used to it by now.
It's okay, Todd. Don't overreact like that.
I am.
You sounded scared.
No. I was listening a little too far away from the mic. You're probably lucky you didn't hear me fall into it.
Yeah. Hey. Oh, my. So what else? It's got to be more. A lot of hate
out
there.
All there is. You know what? There definitely is. It's when it comes to the realms of what we've seen in college basketball lately. I want to go... One thing has been stirring up for me this week is going back to Bill Self's comments when Kansas lost the other night.
Yeah.
To Gonzaga. Yeah. Could he have said those comments that directly? Probably not, because it doesn't look great on him. But let me ask you this. All coaches are thinking inside, they're not thinking it out loud, but they're thinking that themselves, at this day and age, in all college sports, as a head coach, you have to be thinking ahead, because that's what we've created now in college sports with NIL, with the transfer portal, as crazy and crazy as it is. You have to be thinking ahead, because not only do you have to recruit freshmen and high schoolers, you have to keep re-recruiting your current players from leaving. You have to keep making sure you make all your obligations to promote the program and meet NIL standards and all this and that and the other thing. I mean, yeah, you can't just focus on trying to win games anymore. It's not the way it should be. You're right. You should be focusing on who you have, no matter how talented you are or not, what kind of team you have or not. But this is what we've created in college sports. So guess what? If we don't like it, fix it. It's that simple. Fix it. So Bill Self's not necessarily wrong. He probably just shouldn't have said it directly to the media after a tough loss like that.
Yeah,
so
but he was asked, criticism from
that side of things. But this is what we've created. I'm sorry.
But every coach in the country is spending the entire season looking in the moment, looking to the next game, and they're constantly looking around saying, you know what, okay, what's not working here? We got to figure out what's not working here, because we've got to correct it when we have the chance to correct it. That's all he's doing. I mean, is a football coach not concentrating in the bowl game because they're finishing up the recruiting for the early signing period? I mean, it's the same. What's the difference? What's the difference?
Exactly. And again, we created the early signing period, so you're forcing the coach to have to do that anyway.
I mean, the transfer portal's there. What are they supposed to think? You know what? I'll think about this when it's over and Furphy goes pro. All right? We'll think about it then. Or do you sit there and say, hey, look, there's a good chance that Furphy's going to go pro. We have to make sure that either in recruiting or in the transfer portal, we need to replace him. And you can't do that the day after you get eliminated. You do that like a month to 6 weeks ahead of time, starting to think, like, what are we looking for out there? Because eventually this guy's going to go. Everybody thinks that you have to be locked in 24 hours a day on the team and the game. No, you have a life. And you also have to look at the situation, the moment, the game, the week, the month, the season, and the future. Coaches have to do all that all the time. And it's not done in due time. They have to do it all the time. He just said it out loud. And, of course, because it's really cool for clicks, right? And clicks are just an absolutely mindless thing where you can walk into your boss and go, look, I got clicks. Good. Did you do a good job in the sorry sport? No, you didn't. Okay. I don't want your clicks. I mean, you need to have people who are running the show that get that clicks mean nothing. Okay. They mean zero. And it's about time that in our business, it started to be what is the actual content that is in there that gets the person to think, not about the click.
Exactly right. And guess what? At least from a basketball perspective, and I guess somewhat for football too, but from a basketball perspective, that's the reasons why you have assistant coaches. Because guess what? They're the ones that maybe are in charge of scouting opponents that are maybe the upcoming opponent or the opponent after that or the opponent after that. That's how these things work, because the head coach has a zillion other things to worry about. That's how it works now.
I mean, do you think when they sit down as the CEO of whatever company it happens to be and says, hey, look, I've been looking at the 3-year master plan. Well, gee, what about this week? What about today? Yeah, we've been looking at today and this week, but it's also my job to look at the 3-year master plan. Okay. Well, he's the CEO. He's got to look at the master plan.
Exactly right.
I know it's exactly right. That's why I said it.
So there's those ridiculous rules in the NFL. There's the outrage with Bill Self's comments, although, again, I understand it to some degree. And then, finally, I mean, there was some bad officiating, I thought, over the weekend, including in that Sanford-Kansas game. I mean, you can't make that call that far away late in the game with the game on the line like that. But we've talked about officiating before. The other thing that I also came across that kind of irked me this weekend, and I'm sure Todd can attest to this too, is when you have loudmouth parents getting involved in their athletes' lives, such as Caitlin Clark's dad. Now, I guess this is probably, to me at least, to my knowledge, this is the only time that he's been in the limelight, when he was having that back and forth with Caitlin Clark against Holy Cross when she was complaining about the officiating. But this is my message to parents everywhere. Keep your mouth shut during the game. This is coming from me, mind you. Keep your mouth shut during the game, and if you have to talk to your daughter or your son about something, whether it's an X's and O's thing or something like that, where you feel like they can conduct themselves better, you have that when the game's over. You don't have that when you've got 50 cameras on you now, especially when you're Caitlin Clark, and you can avoid all this stuff easily. This is stuff that they have to learn, I'm sure, but this is just a message for parents everywhere, no matter what level sport you're at. It's just keep your mouth shut. Don't embarrass your kids. They're doing the best they can. Things happen. They get frustrated. It happens. Talk about it. Leave it for after the game.
Todd and I, by the way, will be going to Luke's first Little League game. Just to see.
Like I said, again, mind you, this is coming from me, but yes, this will be a goal of mine when my kids start playing, I have to do my best to keep my mouth shut, because ultimately we still want our kids playing sports, not quitting.
You're going to get thrown out.
Listen, the only exception is if your son or daughter is getting egregiously fouled and there's no calls, okay, you can gripe about that. If there's a bad call or something happens late in the game, okay, fine. I mean, there are some exceptions, but like you're in the middle of the game, you're up by 10, you're going to defeat Holy Cross by 50. Just leave it for after the game. That's all I'm asking.
Todd, I think by the third game that we go to, there will be an incident.
Can I take the under?
This is in T-ball. This won't even be an A-ball game with 11 and 12 year olds. This will be in T-ball.
Luke, run out with the ruler. The
good. Stop lying on the ground and picking clover. Stop it. Get up. Get up.
Stop taking pitches.
I think that might be another exception too. You got to actually, play the game. But
get up way to handle now. Move it. You're killing the team. I'm at a T-ball game. This is last year. Right, the kids are all making sandcastles because they were at the plate. They're making sandcastles at the bench. And the cleanup hitter was doing barrel rolls down the hill in the back. I go, oh, yeah, this is great. Stop rolling down the hill. Stop making sand. It's baseball. Do you think your judge would do that? No, he'd be on the IL.
Oh, I will say, save that for Williamsport down the hill to Little League World Series. That's when you can do it during the game.
No, I saw it. I'm watching 7-year-olds do this. I'm just sitting there and I am laughing. Right? I'm just like, oh, yeah, whatever. It's 7. Okay. The parents are like, ah, I'm like, he's 7. Don't worry about it. It's good. But I could see you, Luke. Your mother's embarrassed. You'd blame it on Lisa.
Well, I must say, Luke is hitting the ball up the tee very well, where I'm very encouraged for him to maybe start next summer.
Well, let me put it, the first time he goes out and he picks a clover in the outfield, you're going to freak.
I guess we'll have to see how that goes.
Oh, and we are going to see how it goes. Not only that, we're going to bring... Okay, they created phones. They have video.
Yeah, that is a good point you bring up. Yeah, I'll have to remember that.
Pacing back and forth. It's T-ball. Stop pacing. Sit down. Okay? Okay, you go base to base. We're done. Okay. And then I could see you pitching to the kids. Parent pitch. Aiming the ball. Come on, hit the bat. Hit the bat.
Now, see, in that case, that's where you're trying to instill some fundamentals in them now. So you got to throw them. You got to throw the pitches where you're going to see when they're older, so that they're ready for it.
Except
so they're not
going to
do this toss stuff. We're going to be throwing right at them.
See, Todd, this is the issue right here. All right. He's going to make sure his kid gets his. But after that, he's going to walk off the mat and goes, my ERA is still 0. Like, that's not the goal. Those are your that's your team. And your ERA can't be 0. I need it to be 9.
Just no brushbacks.
Oh, he threw his kid in the father-son game. He's so competitive. All right. I'm telling you, this is an issue.
Got to start him young. That's all I say.
Oh, great. The suit just chimed in. I actually hit Daniel several times pitching batting practice.
I don't know if I go that far, but,
Oh, my goodness.
I was kind of hoping
to make sure they can hit it, but I'm trying to see when I'm throwing fastballs at them or curves or changeups, whatever. I'm trying to teach them the strike zone, not how to avoid a pitch to get on base. I mean,
fastballs.
Let's be real here.
Fastballs.
I have a method to my madness. I don't know what that
five.
Is. What dude's trying to do.
He's five. Okay.
Oh, I was throwing. Yusuke Masasaka. I had a shortstop. Good. Yusuke is a terrific kid, really good player. And they were, I think, 14 at the time. So I'm throwing batting practice in the cage, and I'm behind the screen. And you want to talk about, like, I threw one, and he hit it right back at me, and it just barely missed the screen. It got me right in the chest. I had stitch marks all. It's like. He says he didn't do it on purpose. You know what your problem is? You're going to back your kid off the plate, and you're going to claim that half is yours. That's what's going to happen. That's my half. You're going to back him off the plate.
I mean, you know, if he was getting on my nerves before, like at home, like if he didn't do his chores or something or wasn't listening, then maybe we have to go that route.
The suit says it was not on purpose. He just pitched him in a bit tight. All right?
Yeah.
He was only in the hospital for 6 weeks. Oh, sorry. No, that's not true. He didn't. He's still typing here. He's typing something else ingenious. Let's see. I mean, I can see it now. And then Mark's going to go to soccer because he doesn't want to play baseball after watching this. And Lisa is going to get all over your case about how you treat the kids on the ball field.